Hi, this is Janizi Yamiche, and today is March 26, 2010, and this is 508 TV Show.
And I'm Mike Benedetti, Brendan Mellican.
Good morning.
Clifford Reese.
Hi.
Matt Feinstein and Jen Burt. Today is the one-year anniversary of the Stone Soup Fire, so we have all these people on the show today to talk about that said anniversary. Brendan, anything we should mention before we get into this?
No.
Okay.
All right. Come back.
All right. Great. So, Stone Soup. It's a three-story house. Is it a three-story house?
Mm-hmm.
Four King Street, right there in Main South, right off of Main Street, artist activist space. And a year ago today, it burned down. So we wanted to talk to these four guys about sort of where it was, what it was, where it's been. Anybody want to start off just telling me the background of Stone Soup, what it was all about? Matthew Feinstein, I accuse you.
So Stone Soup, first of all, the fable, right? People might not know it. It comes from the old story of where an old woman comes into a town and where there's a lot of hunger around, and they say, no, you got to move on. She says, no, I have what I need here. I have a pot and a stone, and she starts making a stone soup. And she says, this is going to be a delicious stone soup. I just need some onion. Someone comes out. They've been hoarding onion. Bring it in. Someone brings out a carrot. Well, this is going to be a great stone soup with onion and carrot. We just need some, you know, celery. And it goes on for the rest of the afternoon until everyone is out in the square enjoying this delicious meal. And that's the idea of stone soup. Everyone brings a little bit that they can. And at the end of the day, has a, you know, a beautiful meal together. So Stone Soup was that for Worcester. It was everyone bringing a little bit and having this this space that people call theirs.
And the idea of the fable is that everyone separately thinks they have nothing, and so they hoard. But together, each with his little contribution, together makes an abundance and a wealth.
So let me go back to Matt as one of the old timers just real quick. Why was there this need to make another institution in the city of Worcester?
So there were several spaces that artists and activist groups were renting, and they were lost for various reasons. Rent going up, basically lack of control of our own space. So we decided we really needed to get together and buy a building together. And so so there were a lot of groups involved in the planning process. The Worcester Urnabike, Worcester Roots Project, a bunch of artists, and the free school in the making, and there's lots of different groups. So we came together and made the space ours, basically. There was like 2 years of meeting and looking for spaces before we actually found the space, though.
And it was kind of awesome. Like, I talked many times on this show how I almost felt it was like kind of like the opposite of the anti-city council. It was like, it was like problems were getting solved. Problems were getting solved day to day. Like, good things were happening day to day. There wasn't a lot of rhetoric. There wasn't a lot of grandstanding. There wasn't a lot of, I mean, there was a lot of meetings, I guess, infamously a lot of meetings. But, you know, for many people there, it was just like this awesome place where, like, things were happening and the city was getting better. Can you guys talk about what kinds of stuff would be going on there in an average day? Janizi?
Well, we have the Toxic Soil Busters,
okay,
which is a youth-led cooperative.
Okay.
And we do landscaping, so we did lead remediation.
Yeah.
And well, with Stone Soup, the backyard, we fixed it up because
mm-hmm.
it was all bushy and dirty and all that. And Toxic Soil Busters cleaned it up. That's one of the organizations in Stone Soup.
What are the organizations that have, like, because people basically had, like, office space in there, use it for public events, right?
Yeah, we had a big room that we had our events, like, Evan Greer.
Mm-hmm.
He's singers, one of the artists that comes in. We have events like come up with like donations and stuff, and he will come in and perform,
mm-hmm.
and people will come in and donate money or anything.
Okay.
And
to help support you guys. What else was going on in Stone Soup day to day?
Oh, well, we had the free school there, so there's generally a lot of kids running around doing democratic learning. So they're deciding what they want to learn about with their teachers. And then there's usually a lot of other kids running around for Earn a Bike.
People are fixing and building bikes in the basement.
Building bikes in the basement. People cook in the kitchen with Food Not Bombs. Get meals for whoever wants them every Sunday.
EPICA, the ex-prisoners advocacy group, had an office in Stone Soup. There was a print shop, right?
Yes, there was a graphic shop. They partly had a press on the a silk screening printing machine in the basement, and then I don't know what you call it, a lithograph press on the second floor.
And also, like, we had a computer room.
Okay.
Where there was, like, I think 5 computers that the youth in the neighborhood or younger kids will come in and use the computer and use the library.
Yeah, there's like a library in there too.
Yeah, we had a library that kids would come read books. I mean, it kept kids from, you know, hanging out in the streets, you know. Stone Soup was like a place where people can just come in and have a good day or enjoy what we do in there. It was kind of cool.
There were church groups in there too, right?
Yeah.
On Sundays.
There's one woman that I'm thinking of in particular who is a preacher and had a regular Bible study meeting that that she hosted.
Okay. So anyway, that's that's just a little bit of what was going on in Stone Soup. I kind of thought it was awesome, not only because it was like a really cool, like, if you wanted to have a if you wanted to do a meeting, it was like a great space for sort of with not a lot of lead time. You could usually get it for a meeting. Your group could do something there, and just the dynamism of, like, you know, people from all these different organizations, like, just bumping into each other in the hallway.
Yeah, I think that was, like, for me the most important thing is that, you know, I don't have time to do every, you know, like, we can't all do everything we want to do, you know. I'm not an artist, but it's nice to go and see, oh, look, this is the cool art that someone's created, or I really support what EPICA is doing, so I can be there during the day doing what I need to do, and then, you know, someone says, oh, we really need you to come out next month to this rally at the State House, or just make this one phone call. It's a lot easier when someone is telling you that face-to-face. For me, when I was trying to do whatever organizing for my cause, they would, you know, it's that solidarity between different people, and easy to connect with people, and have those relationships beyond too, just like that phone call.
So there's a phrase we like to use, cross-pollinating, right? So the idea that there are buds, there are flowers throughout Worcester that are projects making Worcester better, and that we need to be connected to each other. We need to be cross-pollinating and reinforcing and inspiring each other. And that happened in beautiful ways at Stone Soup in the first few years. That was unexpected, you know. So the ex-prisoners group EPICA was meeting on the second floor, and the Worcester Immigrant Coalition was meeting on the first floor, and happened to have a dinner break at the same time and shared all their food and started talking together and actually started to think about ways to work on campaigns together and to really support each other's groups. And things like that would happen all the time, where there are two or three things going on and people would intermingle and get to know each other and build relationships. And people, you know, in the neighborhood, too, would build a lot of relationships, especially through the block party.
And that kind of thing is really bound to happen when you have people physically close to each other.
Yeah.
You know, physically on the next, upstairs or next, in the room next door or whatever, you know, as opposed to I have my own separate little office in a building downtown and, you know, I just come and do my thing and then go home.
Right. It's kind of cool whenever the people who are sharing the building have something, a little something in common, just because then it's easier for them to communicate.
Even if all they have in common is a general attitude about society, you know, even if that's the only thing they have in common, that's enough to spark creative collaboration.
Yeah. I just remember that I actually used to do this show from one of the computers at Stone Soup. I totally forgot that.
See? See, there you go.
So then there was a fire a year ago.
Yes, a year ago today.
What was the story with... Yeah, it's been a year. What was the story with that fire?
I think, and these guys will correct me if I'm wrong, I think they never actually determined conclusively what caused the fire.
Mm-hmm.
But the default theory is that it was electrical.
Okay.
So I don't think anybody ever said, "Oh, this is what caused it," you know.
Okay.
But we think it was electrical.
Does that sound about right, guys? And then so the whole back part of the building, the fire just went from the basement probably up the whole back started half in the building.
That we do know that. It started in the basement in the Erna bike shop and went up into the kitchen, which is in the back on the first floor, and to the second floor, and there was a lot of like smoke damage, and then of course when the fire department gets there, there's water damage,
right.
And they you know crack a big hole in the roof, and mm-hmm.
But that whole back half of the building was basically destroyed by the fire.
Yeah, okay. It's still standing technically, but.
There's like holes in the floor and things.
Yeah, the floor is sagging and it's dangerous. And
There were no humans in the building.
Yes, right.
Luckily, there was a cat. No one was hurt. There was one cat that died in the fire, Coco. Mm-hmm. But neighbors came out so quickly. The night of the fire, the day after that, consistently to help clean up, to help, you know, pitch in, save whatever was inside.
The day after, there was like 50 people or something out there, like helping take stuff out and, you know, sort of help shut down the site. It was awesome.
And the night after, a group came out and helped decorate the boarded up windows, you know, because we can't just leave an ugly burnt building in the neighborhood. We want to be able to still bring the kind of life as much as we can. And so you know, went on to organize the block party, even though we didn't have the building and things like that. So
yeah. So I want to talk about sort of about rebuilding plans, but first I guess I wanted to talk about how, like, there's actually still this like kind of like this community of people who are involved with Stone Soup, which is kind of amazing and kind of awesome. I just wanted to ask you guys like what's been the situation with that? I know all the member groups have continued and are doing their thing, but has that any of that creative cross-pollination continued between those guys, or connections continued, or?
I mean, I think you can't, like, the great thing about being in the same building is we built relationships, you know, and it's definitely been hard not being in the same building, like, but I don't think you can lose those relationships between people and between organizations.
Okay.
And I'm still amazed at how many people come out every month for a general meeting and show up for all the different committee meetings we have, or just to do like a small task or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I mean there was actually an anniversary party, and there was no Stone Soup to have the anniversary party in, but the anniversary party went great. So it's kind
was
of
huge.
Remarkable.
It was a big success.
Yeah. So what's the plan going forward? I guess this is what everybody wants to know. What's the situation? When are we going to see Stone Soup, the community? Have something.
I don't know, but I think I went to one of the meetings, and there were, well, more than one of the meetings, and they were talking about rebuilding Stone Soup.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just really excited. Can't wait for that to happen.
Yeah.
Coming to Stone Soup was awesome for me. It was a place for me to, like, hang out, do homework, eat. We had a kitchen,
cook,
you know.
Eat
and cook. But you know, it was really great, and I just want that. I want to see that again, and I want to see all that people that were in there all over again. Even though right now we're separated,
mm-hmm.
people are in different, you know, part of the city, or whatever. Just want to see them all in that same building again, and have that to reunite. Have that, you know, loving and caring and friendship all over again. And,
so do you think, so is the basic plan to rebuild that same on that same space, that same site? Yeah.
We're in the process of negotiating an insurance settlement, and that process is arduous and tedious, and you know the insurance company loves it when it takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
That's their favorite thing, because the longer they wait, the the less likely it is that they'll have to pay whatever amount of money. But we're persistent and tenacious, and it looks like it looks like we might actually have a settlement within the next few weeks.
Really?
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I have to say it's been frustrating just because it seems like for a while now it's been, well, maybe we're a month or two away.
Yeah.
Maybe we're a month or two away.
And I'm still saying that, right? But it really does look like we might in the next few weeks have a settlement and hopefully start serious construction even possibly before the actual settlement.
Because you guys have raised some money also besides from that settlement for rebuilding,
well,
right?
Well, right now we're doing fundraising.
Okay.
And Stone Soup hired a new fundraiser lady that's going to, you know, do events and help out to, and everybody's contributing, everybody's helping to fundraise money to help Stone Soup or to have the insurance company to rebuild Stone Soup out of it again.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
So I think, and we've already submitted some plans to the Historical Commission, which is another process that takes a long time.
Is that a historical structure?
Yeah.
Even kind of, half burned down.
They still, it's half burned down, and, you know, whatever we do to it is going to make it nice again.
Okay.
But there's a lot of, like, whether we use slate or whether we use this, like, composite slate, which...
For the roof?
Looks like, yeah, for the roof. Or, like, all these decisions that Historical Commission has an opinion on. That we got to talk to them about. But I also think that when we rebuild we're at the retreat, and Cosme, who runs a graphic shop, was saying that, like, you know, we can't be constrained by the old Stone Soup or the old walls. Like, imagine what we can have even better than what we had before. So just, like, a bigger event space and all the things we dreamed about, trying to make that happen as we rebuild. So that's an exciting opportunity, you know. It was a real tragedy.
Mm. Hmm. Have I seen anything?
Well, just that there's been great builders and architects that have been donating their time and working with us and have the patience to work with a consensus-based organization, too, and with lots of different ideas of what the building can look like when we rebuild. So so we want to, you know, really appreciate all the different skilled and creative people that have been involved in this planning to rebuild process.
What's the chances that this is going to end up being the greenest building in Maine South or something like that?
Very good. Oh, yes, we do have plans to do some serious weatherization work on the building, and make it participatory in the same in the process too. People can learn how to do weatherization work on the building as we rebuild it, and we want to see the rebuilding process very hands-on, and a lot of volunteer groups have already, you know, offered their help.
And individuals, too. I've talked to some people just, we've actually had some meetings. We've actually had some meetings on the porch when the weather was nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at various times that I've been at the building, I've talked to people who were just walking by and are from the neighborhood and would say, hey, when you guys are ready to rebuild, I'd love to, do a little demo for you, a little demolition or whatever. You know, I can offer my sweat, to the project. And so we're hoping that we'll use as many people from the neighborhood as we can.
And if you like... My father is electrician, and I had a talk with him, and he's even like willing to volunteer to do the electric stuff at Stone Soup for us, which
awesome.
I think is great.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm very excited about this. Anything else about Stone Soup?
Tomorrow, if people want to come out, we're doing a little bit of a cleanup outside, you know, all the trash that collects over the winter and you don't see because of snow. So if people want to come out at noon.
Saturday the 27th.
Yeah, tomorrow. Saturday the 27th at noon. Okay. Can chat about Stone Soup, pick up some garbage. It'll be awesome.
Awesome.
I love Stone Soup. I love that place. I love Stone Soup!
Yeah, I just think it's remarkable that a group has been able to stay together for a year without the primary purpose, anchor of the group, which is the building. It's clear that there's a vision, you know, that there's a community and that there's a vision, and that survives through all the hard times we've been through. And we're gonna see a beautiful space and a beautiful thriving community permanently in Worcester coming up. So
and a place for me to live.
Are you moving into
I want to before we used to have a caretaker.
Yeah.
Like I think 2 bedrooms that people were sharing.
That,
and I want to.
That part of our mission is affordable housing.
Yeah.
So it's artists, activists, community organizations, grassroots organizations, and affordable housing is actually.
It's awesome how that worked out. How having a caretaker kind of plays into that.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're not giving up.
And we're very excited because, as it turns out, you even without a kettle, you can still have stone soup.
I have a rock and a piece of granite.
Right.
Awesome. Well, guys, thanks for being on. We're going to talk about a couple more topics. If you guys want to throw in your 2 cents, that's totally great, too. Hi.
How are you?
Good morning.
How's good to see you.
You want to scoot over here?
Sure.
Come towards us a little bit. I wanted to mention one sad bit of news from this week, which is involved the death of your friend Joe Martin down in Brazil.
Yeah, so that was 2007. He was shot by a Brazilian police officer after an altercation. His trial, the trial of the police officer who shot him was this past Tuesday. It was an incredibly long process just for his mother, Fran Martin, and another aunt who was kind of leading the charge on the legal team to get that trial to actually take place. Mm-hmm. It's unusual to even bring a police officer in Brazil to court. After, I think it was 7 hours, maybe 10 hours.
I think it's 10 hours in the paper.
Of combined trial time and deliberation, the officer was found not guilty, which was not a huge surprise to everyone, unfortunately, including the family. That seems to be par for the course in Brazil. Mm. The number of, technically it's still a murder, even if he's not found, just the act itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
The number of civilians who are shot and killed by police without cause is rather incredible. So it wasn't a shock to anybody that the case was thrown out. But what's interesting is the amount of attention that it's received. And if there's any upside to that, it is the attention. And from what I understand, Congressman McGovern is going to be holding some hearings regarding anything that can be done just to call attention to the issues revolving around civilians and their interactions with law enforcement and military in Brazil in particular, but South America in general. We'll see what happens. It does appear that the legal team is going to appeal whether or not it'll go anywhere up in the air.
Well, that's sad. It's a sad
It was Joe's mother, Fran, and Aunt Elizabeth. They were down for the trial, so they were there on hand for the whole thing. It'll be interesting to see what their feedback is when they get back stateside.
I thought it was on a lighter note. I thought it was interesting that Councillor Rushton. I'm so tired this morning. I don't want to confuse him with Rushford. Councillor Rushton, zombie councillor, brought up panhandling this week at the city council meeting. Because last month I was explaining to somebody who hadn't been in Worcester during the whole previous anti-panhandling campaign in Worcester about that, and it really struck me, like, what a total fiasco that was.
Yeah, like, I think that was 2006 or whatnot. That was right when we started doing this, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, and it was incredible, because it was basically like, it was this attempt by the city to deal with the fact that there were maybe 20 panhandlers in the city, not all of them full-time, but there were maybe 20 individuals who were panhandling on and off in the city. So they put up these billboards, and they put up these posters everywhere, and they had this whole, they had a plan, a vague plan on paper to somehow financially deal with the problem, or sort of, you know, actually like have somebody deal with the individual panhandlers. That part never happened, but the propaganda campaign happened. And it was amazing to me just thinking about it, like, basically the city's saying, like, let's take a really minor problem in the scale of things, problem, but that's very stereotypical of the negative things that people think about Worcester. Mm-hmm. Let's put it on giant billboards.
I'm not even sure it's a problem, really.
Well, I think that was what
I think a lot of people had a problem with back when, and it was when Tim Murray was mayor, what our last campaign. I mean, it got ridiculous to the point where there were, you said signs, but I mean, they were reminiscent of the signs you'd seen at a campground, right? Like, don't feed the bears sort of.
Right.
Well, and that's the thing, but, it's like, so they're not only big signs saying, welcome to Worcester, watch out, there's panhandlers.
Don't help people.
But it was, we don't like to help people, neither. So.
But the thing that's always been strange is, you know, I mean, it's the city trying to tackle an issue that has existed since the dawn of civilization, right? And with the assumption that they're going to be the ones after, you know, however many thousands of years, they're going to be the ones to figure this out, which is nice, and you know, but the effort is appreciated, but mm-hmm. not likely. The other issue, though, is, especially when it came to panhandling, is the Supreme Court's already dealt with this one. I mean, the Supreme Court has ruled correctly that it is not illegal to stand on the side of the road and ask somebody for help. And so panhandling is protected speech, technically, mm-hmm. The idea that I'm pleading with you for help, and if you wish to respond, thank you. What's interesting about what Councilor Rushen is doing is that they're actually looking for some clarification now as to how to differentiate between a panhandler, which has constitutional protection under the Supreme Court ruling, as opposed to, you know, the Little League kids standing out in the street with buckets collecting money.
Do they not have constitutional rights?
Well, it's interesting because they have to apply for a permit. Yeah. So
really?
Yeah, whenever you have like a stand-up day, like when firefighters or Little Leagues or whatnot to raise money in the street, you actually need to get a permit from the city to go out and walk, you know, this, you know, in traffic.
Hold on.
So you need a permit to stand on the street with
like
a bucket
they
and
call
ask
like
for
the,
money?
The boot drives? Yeah, that you need. The city actually has permits for it. And I was at the council meeting thinking to myself as they were talking about this.
Have you violated this law? Don't say you violated this law. You're on television.
This is going on in Worcester?
Yeah. Well, most cities have an ordinance that you need to get a permit to raise funds like that.
And
their argument is typically sound. It's more of like a public safety thing. Like, we don't want, you know, 8-year-old kids without any supervision running in and out of traffic. We at least want to know that they're there when they get hit by a bus, you know, is essentially the sort of thing. But yes, it's a permitting structure. But I think the what's going to be interesting is, if anything, it's likely that the legal department for the city is going to come back and say, well, yeah, we don't really have any way to enforce that permitting process,
right?
Because if panhandling is legal, all it would take would be the Little Leagues to change their verbiage a little bit, and there would be nothing to stop them from going out with mm-hmm. out a permit. It seems more like one of those issues where there's a permit for the sake of having a permit, and nobody's questioned it up until this point,
right?
Until right now.
Yeah, because all I know is you need a permit if you're underage to get a job, but I did not know till now.
Oh, you need a lot of permits in Worcester.
Yeah, to
you didn't get your permit to come here?
You need a permit to get a permit.
Well, I got a permit for my principal to be here.
The TV wow. permit. We're running out of time. I just want to mention a couple more things. One is that the Center for Nonviolent Solutions is having their annual meeting tomorrow at the library, again, the Saturday the 27th. TV-wise, we're like three
what
weeks
time?
Ahead. I think it's in the morning. It's like at 9 or something. You probably got search your email. You probably got emails about this. And they have like a ton of stuff brewing. They haven't. I don't think that they've sort of have had a completed campaign yet, but they have had a ton of good stuff brewing there. So I'm gonna try to drag myself out of bed and get down there for that. Something else. Oh, today's the last day for the Google Fiber for Communities thing.
Yeah, anyone who can actually fill out an application for that, please do. I mean, the actual application, the input that we received, creative input, has been awesome. But today we actually need individuals to go to Google's website for the project and actually fill out the formal application. It'll take 5 minutes to do it, and it would be greatly appreciated.
Probably by the time people see this, that will be over with. I want to ask Brendan, when do we find out who are the lucky winners of?
First thing tomorrow morning. So fill. No,
really?
I don't have any idea. I'm sure it'll be a long process.
They get an algorithm.
I mean, Google, we've talked about this before, what they're doing is actually staying in front of what the FCC is doing through the National Broadband Plan. So I think there's going to be a lot of back and forth between, you know, what's going to be the best way to roll this out after they identify the city that they would like to do this in.
Okay. We got 30 seconds left. Anything?
Oh, Clark Knight. I want to say something real quick. So we're helping cafeteria workers that want to unionize at Clark. We've been negotiating with the administration for months now. They are not receptive at all. They said if workers got fired, we'd cross that bridge when we came to it. Even though all the workers get fired at the end of the school year, collect unemployment over the summer, or get another job, and then are rehired in the fall, we figure that they're probably just not going to send the pro-union workers a letter. So we're asking for preferential rehire, among a few other things, which means Everybody
would be hired back.
So we're having a big rally April 1st.
All right.
1 o'clock.
Awesome. Everybody, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Say hi to Worcester.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.